It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. One of the issues in the Brett Kavanaugh attempted rape allegation is whether the hearing scheduled for next Monday is too soon for the FBI to do enough of an investigation to have the hearing based on all the factual evidence that can be obtained. Kavanaugh and some Republicans tried to get the hearing scheduled for today when this all broke out yesterday. We'll talk about whether even Monday is enough time for the American people to get a full enough story. Another issue is whether Kavanaugh lied under oath during his earlier testimony. Let's go back into his confirmation hearings last week for a couple of clips. Democratic Senator Mazie Hirono had this simple, straightforward exchange with Kavanaugh.
Since you became a legal adult, have you ever made unwanted requests for sexual favors or committed any verbal or physical harassment or assault of a sexual nature?
No.
Technically, not a lie, no. Even if Dr. Ford's allegation about attempted rape is true, because Kavanaugh was 17 at the time, the age in Maryland for being tried as an adult is 18. In many states, it is 17. In Utah, in fact, the state of Orrin Hatch, Kavanaugh's most vocal defender so far, you get tried as an adult starting at 14. But where this alleged incident took place in the D.C. area, it's 18. His behavior in high school came up at least one other time. Republican Senator John Kennedy of Oklahoma didn't press Kavanaugh, but rather joked with him about it.
What was it like for you? What were you like? Were you, did you ever get in trouble? Did you, were you more of a John Boy Walton type or a Ferris Bueller type? These ladies are old enough to understand.
I love sports, first and foremost. I think that I worked hard at school. I had a lot of friends. I've talked a lot about my friends.
Yeah.
And they've been here. So it was very formative. And when I think back on it...
You left out the trouble part. I was waiting for that.
Right. So that's encompassed under the friends, I think. Yeah.
So is there a lie in there, a partial truth versus whole truth lie in that answer about trouble and Ferris Bueller when he just said, I was into sports and friends? Maybe depending on what's revealed, or maybe not. Now, Senator Hatch asked Kavanaugh if he was on an email list of people who Judge Alex Kaczynski sent sexist jokes and other inappropriate material to before Kaczynski resigned last year over multiple sexual misconduct allegations. Here's that 12-second exchange.
Now, I understand from media reports that Judge Kaczynski operated an email list where he would send inappropriate material. Were you on this email list?
I don't remember anything like that, Senator.
So Kavanaugh said he didn't remember anything like being on such a list. So Senator Hirono later pressed him about the idea of possibly having forgotten that kind of thing.
In 2008, in connection with another investigation into Judge Kaczynski, the LA Times wrote a story about something called the Easy Rider Gag List, an email group that the judge used to send what the Times reported was, quote, a steady diet of tasteless humor, end quote. The report describes the list as made up of friends and associates, including his law clerks, colleagues on the federal bench, prominent attorneys, and journalists. Senator Hatch asked you if you were on this Easy Rider Gag List, where Judge Kaczynski would send inappropriate materials. Your response was that you don't remember anything like that. Are you telling us that you may have received a steady diet of what people on the list have described as, quote, a lot of vulgar jokes, very dirty jokes, but you don't remember it?
No, I don't remember anything like that,
the answer is no. Have you ever...
If I could elaborate.
I think that's a complete answer.
So there was that exchange, though he didn't get to elaborate. And there are a few clips from the first round of Kavanaugh confirmation hearings. We'll see if the one now scheduled for next Monday takes place and whether there is follow-up to any of those exchanges. My first guest today is Politico congressional reporter Elena Shore, who is covering the story. Hi, Elena. Thanks for doing this. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, thank you.
And let me play one more clip right off the bat. This is Republican Senator Susan Collins of Maine yesterday on what she's looking for as this process moves forward.
Obviously, if Judge Kavanaugh has lied about what happened, that would be disqualifying.
So do you know what Senator Collins was referring to? Like what possible lies she'll be scrutinizing Kavanaugh about at this point?
Yes, I think Senator Collins was specifically referring to Judge Kavanaugh's repeated blanket denials of Dr. Ford's allegations. The clips that you played of various other threads of the Me Too movement affecting the confirmation are certainly interesting. But at this point, undecided Republicans are chiefly concerned with Dr. Ford.
Listeners, we'll open up the phones from the beginning. Anything you want to say or ask about the allegation of attempted rape from his high school days against Brett Kavanaugh, made by Palo Alto College research psychologist Dr. Christine Ford, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Listeners, how will you decide what you believe about the allegation or the denial? Have you come to believe anything already? What about the question of whether this act, if you do believe it's credible, is disqualifying for Kavanaugh, since it happened when he was 17 and there's no known allegation of anything like that since? That's another question that senators are already debating. Or anything else you want to say or ask, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, with Elena Shore from Politico. Elena, in Dr. Ford's
description... It's actually Alana, sorry.
Alana, I'm so sorry. There's an A there, E-L-A-N-A, Alana. Sure, is my guest. Ha. In Dr. Ford's description of the alleged incident, she says a classmate of Kavanaugh's was also involved, Mark Judge, also allegedly drunk at the time, who has gone on to be a writer for conservative media outlets. My understanding is that Judge at first gave a tepid denial, more of an I don't recall, and later a more firmly worded denial. Have you seen either of those?
Yes, I certainly have, and that is correct. He initially said he had no recollection and then issued pretty much the same blanket denial that Judge Kavanaugh did. It's important to note that no one is discussing calling Mark Judge as a witness. If Monday's hearing happens, it will just be two witnesses, the judge and Dr. Ford.
Why wouldn't they call Mark Judge if he was allegedly present in the room?
It's a great question. This was a decision made by Republicans. Republicans see this as, for lack of a better term, essentially a he said, she said betting case.
Vox today gives some background on Judge. For example, it says he's floated some controversial ideas in his writings, including asking in 2006 whether gay people are perverts and longing for the days when President George W. Bush could give his wife Laura a, quote, loving but firm pat on the backside in public as a show that he, quote, knew who was boss. And it says he's also the author of several books, including one recounting his teenage years of alcoholism and addiction. So if he's not called as a witness in this hearing, if it takes place on Monday, is he going to wind up being a witness in the press?
I think it's fair to say he already is a witness in the press. And, you know, certainly Mr. Judge's memoir, which details extensive episodes of teenage drinking and features a character named, this is not a joke, Bart O'Kavanaugh, have already been heavily scrutinized.
Bart O'Kavanaugh, like Bart Simpson?
Yes. I mean, people are sort of chuckling because it's a pretty poor attempt to mask the identity of a Brett Kavanaugh, it certainly seems.
Oh, it was in his book. I see. Is it clear that Dr. Ford wants this hearing and has agreed to participate in it?
This is a very important matter to make clear. Dr. Ford has not yet agreed to participate. Chairman Chuck Grassley of the Judiciary Committee went on a conservative radio show this morning and said that his staff had reached out to her camp 3 or 4 times before announcing this hearing. She has not yet agreed to appear. Her lawyer, Deborah Katz, is extremely well known for representing women at the center of high-profile sexual misconduct cases. And it is safe to assume that if Deborah Katz feels that her client won't get a fair hearing from these senators, she won't come.
That's interesting. And in that context, Politico, I see, asked Anita Hill a few questions about this and got this response. Quote, "The reluctance of someone to come forward demonstrates that even in the Me Too era, it remains incredibly difficult to report harassment, abuse, or assault by people in power. Given the seriousness of these allegations, the government needs to find a fair and neutral way for complaints to be investigated. The Senate Judiciary Committee should put in place a process that enables anyone with a complaint of this nature to be heard. I have seen firsthand what happens when such a process is weaponized against an accuser, and no one should have to endure that again." That from Anita Hill to Politico. And I guess those words are pretty good context in which to understand Dr. Ford's possible reluctance, yes?
Absolutely. It's important to remember that Anita Hill didn't come forward to share her story until after Clarence Thomas's confirmation hearings were done as well. So a lot of Republicans are out there saying, why did this appear at the 11th hour? And we can certainly debate that. But that is pretty much what happened in the Hill case.
What does Anita Hill, if you know, consider to be weaponizing the process against an accuser, as she put it, rather than the fair and neutral process that she also refers to?
Well, Professor Hill sent that statement to me reporting on this. We did not conduct an interview, so I wouldn't presume to speak for her. But I think anyone who was alive at that time remembers the atmosphere at those hearings as being extremely biased against, frankly, Professor Hill's side of the story and very favorable towards Justice Thomas. So the weaponization dealt with, you know, a lot of questions about her morals, her motivations, et cetera, and far less so about Justice Thomas's. So I think Professor Hill and a lot of, you know, female advocates for victims in this process out there are concerned that not a lot has changed.
So what's the process between now and Monday? Again, assuming the Republicans and Brett Kavanaugh still want to go forward, what's the process by which it will be determined if Dr. Ford will testify, and if she decides not to, what happens then?
Well, that's a great question, and I'm not going to try to answer it definitively because no one in Washington knows right now. One Kavanaugh ally told us that their camp hears that Katz is trying to set serious conditions on Ford's testimony, which could mean, don't do it so fast. We need more than 6 days to prepare. Let's delay past Monday. And Grassley hasn't ruled that out. It could mean we won't testify at all. It could mean ongoing negotiations. This is really an hour-by-hour story at this point. But I think it's fair to say that Republicans will probably try to press ahead on this nomination whether or not she agrees to testify. The question then is whether undecided Republicans like Susan Collins and Jeff Flake will think that their leaders have put up enough of an effort to hear from Ford to support this judge.
Were the Republicans trying to rush up this hearing for today? We heard a clip of Kellyanne Conway yesterday saying Judge Kavanaugh is ready to go tomorrow, which would be today. Other Republicans said the same thing because they thought he's prepared and she's not.
No, there are certain rules in the Senate about noticing hearings in advance, and there's been a formal notice. This is happening on Monday, so it's quite possible they will delay it. But at this point, it's not happening earlier than Monday.
Right. So any talk yesterday about doing it today, like he's ready to go tomorrow, which we were hearing yesterday, that was just talk.
Just talk, yes.
And some Democrats are calling for the hearing to be postponed so the FBI can complete its investigation and put more facts on the table to base a hearing on, so it's less of just he said, she said. Here is Democratic Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut on Rachel Maddow last night.
My strong belief is that there has to be a full, fair FBI investigation before that hearing so that we know facts and we're not just asking questions in the dark. And that investigation has to involve sworn interviews with not only Dr. Ford and Judge Kavanaugh, but also other witnesses who should be at that hearing.
So Alana, can you give us some background on that? Is the FBI already investigating?
The FBI released a statement last night clarifying its responsibilities in this matter, which are important to make clear. The FBI conducts a background investigation of nominees at this level to determine if there are risks to national security. They've already done that in Kavanaugh's case. These late-breaking allegations have been added to his background check file, but the FBI isn't required to conduct any further investigation of them to determine his potential national security risk. Now, a lot of what Democrats are referring to actually goes back to the Anita Hill precedent, when the FBI did spend several days vetting her allegations against Justice Thomas. That was, again, not required, but a special step that they took at that juncture. Times have changed. It's pretty clear that the Trump administration is not going to try to devote specialized FBI resources to something like this. So that puts Democrats in a little bit of a bind. How long can they continue to complain that the Trump administration isn't doing more, and when do they pivot to their actual strategy here? It suggests to me they're preparing to not show up on Monday if the hearing happens.
My guest is Alana Shore, covering the Kavanaugh confirmation process and now these attempted rape allegations. For Politico, 212-433-WNYC is our phone number, 212-433-9692. Our lines are full, and you can also tweet a question or a comment at Brian Lehrer. Barbara in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Barbara.
Hello. My question is, if the professor has taken a lie detector test, why can't Judge Kavanaugh take one as well?
Great question. Are they talking about that in Washington?
Stop walking.
Okay. Alana?
I'm still outside.
Sorry, I think we're switching phones here. Let's see, and I think we have a better phone line now, changing on the fly. Alana, are you there?
I'm here.
Good, and I think it sounds better. I don't know if you could hear the caller while we were switching lines. Barbara in Manhattan was asking, why shouldn't Kavanaugh take a lie detector test since Dr. Ford did?
Thank you for clarifying. I hadn't heard. Well, Dr. Ford appears to have submitted to that voluntarily. It's not actually clear if Kavanaugh would also submit to one voluntarily, but it is important to tell listeners that there's a lot of science out there debunking polygraphs, definitive proof that anyone is telling the truth. So I just want to throw that note of caution in there on the veracity of polygraphs as a metric.
So what are the politics or the strategies behind Dr. Ford having taken a polygraph test? I think that's raising suspicions on the part of some people who are saying if she wanted to remain private or if she doesn't have political motivations here, why before her name was outed did she go so far as to take a lie detector test this summer?
Look, it's a fair question. And because Dr. Ford has only spoken to the Washington Post at this point, I can't answer that definitively in terms of why she chose to do that. I do know, however, that the Post began communicating with her weeks before she came forward. Remember, she sent her initial letter through her congresswoman in that Bay Area district to Senator Feinstein in late July, right after Kavanaugh got nominated. So it's quite possible that in the process of dealing with the Post, Dr. Ford decided to take a polygraph to bolster her case should she decide to ultimately change her mind and attach her name to it. But that's speculation. I have no idea why.
Right. So it would only be speculation what Dr. Ford was originally hoping would happen by doing what she did, which was reporting her story to her local member of Congress, a member of the House from California where she lives, who then passed it on to Senator from California, Dianne Feinstein, who's on the Judiciary Committee. Dr. Ford contacted her local Congress member and a Washington Post tip line, but remaining anonymous in that context.
Yes, and it's also important for listeners to know, and this may be something that some female listeners who've gone through this themselves can attest to, it's a very touchy emotional and psychological process when it comes to deciding how and whether you want to tell stories like this. We know from the Washington Post reporting that this was an issue that Dr. Ford discussed in couples therapy with her husband. It clearly was, as she described it, a fairly lifelong trauma. So this is not uncommon for women to sort of go one way and the other way when it comes to deciding how much of their story they want to tell.
Millicent in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hello, Millicent.
Hi. Judge Kavanaugh should not be placed on the Supreme Court. He is going to determine what happens to a lot of people, including black people, affirmative action, and the different things that affect the poor, including immigration. He has proven to be a liar. He lied to get onto the federal court. And if the doctor does not testify, Donald Trump and his cohorts will push this through. I hope she testifies. And I have no confidence in Judge Kavanaugh. He is guilty, and he should not be on the Supreme Court.
Why do you determine that he's guilty, Millicent?
I determine that he's guilty because he's lied in the past, and that Donald Trump had to do executive order to hide some of his writings from the Bush administration. It has never been done before in the history of this country.
And you told our screener, tell me if I got this right, Kavanaugh would not have given a minority child a pardon or a pass if that child had come before him?
I do not think so. I do not think so.
Millicent, thank you so much. And that's another thread of conversation that's starting to break out, Ilana. There's a New York Magazine story today with the headline, Conservatives Suddenly Realize Juvenile Offenders Deserve Leniency, which is pretty funny when they put it that way, because it's conservatives who generally argue, oh, well, you should be tried as an adult when you're 16, when you're 15, when you're 14, which I think is what it is in Utah, because you know what you're doing when you commit a violent crime. Here they're saying he was only 17, even if he did this, this shouldn't follow him.
True. I have to say, I find that rather a straw man, and I think most senators do too. To most senators, what matters is that he's denying that he did it. So whether or not we should give particular leniency to a 17-year-old with a potential drinking problem, it matters that right now he continues to say, I wasn't at the party in question, I didn't do it. And that speaks to his character for senators in the present moment.
And I guess it cuts both ways, because you could say the progressive ethic is to say that somebody who commits an act of violence, a violent crime at age 17, should not have that follow him for the rest of his life and dog his career. Of course, there's a different standard when we're talking about confirmation to the United States Supreme Court. But do you think...
Most certainly.
But do you think, from what you just said before, that if the issue is whether he's lying about having done it or not, that if they determine to their satisfaction that he did do this at age 17, or the weight of the evidence indicates that he probably did do this at age 17, that the Republicans are going to fall away from him and we're not really in that scenario headed for a serious national conversation about whether it was a youthful indiscretion, quote unquote?
Yes, I do genuinely think that if a significant number of moderate Republicans believes Dr. Ford and not him, his nomination is done for.
And what about an indication of possible lack of truthfulness on his part, because his denial says he was not at that party? But my understanding is that Dr. Ford has said she doesn't remember exactly what party, what location, what date. It was just one of the nights when the kids from these high schools were hanging around together around 1982. So if she's saying she doesn't remember exactly where and when, and he's saying, I wasn't at that party, does that indicate that he's fudging something, because he's responding more specifically than anybody is even alleging that there's a specific about?
Well, certainly that has been mentioned in the pundit sphere, frankly, but at this point, I am reporting hearsay about that conversation that Judge Kavanaugh had with Senator Orrin Hatch. So it's tough for me to say how senators are viewing that conversation that only one of them had. And talking to them a lot, every day, frankly, senators tend to rely on one-to-one interactions. They're not going to take paraphrased hearsay from a colleague's conversation.
And here is Senator Hatch apparently having made up his mind, even while admitting he doesn't know Dr. Ford.
Well, I think she's mistaken. I think she's mistaken something, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know her.
So that clip was a little off mic, but he said, "I think she's mistaken. I think she's mistaking something." And then he said, "I don't know her." Has Senator Hatch been asked how, since he doesn't know her, he can come to such a firm conclusion that she's mistaken?
Absolutely. I was one of the reporters who did when that recording was taken, and he didn't have a good answer. But it's important to know that Senator Hatch supported Clarence Thomas. He supported his former aide, Rob Porter, when Rob Porter was accused of domestic abuse that ultimately forced him from the White House. This is a senator whose sympathies tend to lie, frankly, with the people in his political network, and he's hardly alone in that.
Bob in Danbury, you're on WNYC. Bob, thank you for calling.
Yes, I want to raise the question of this letter that came in from 65 classmates of Kavanaugh's that basically said he's a great guy, he would never do anything like that. The Republicans obviously knew about this incident, or else how do you come up with 65 of your high school classmates? Brian, even with you on the air, if you broadcast the message, you know, you need 65 or 70 people to vouch for your existence back in high school. How long would it take? These guys came out with this the day after the accusation.
Bob, thank you. What's that letter? Are you familiar with that, Alana?
Oh, intimately. We've done a lot of reporting on it. And although it certainly is fair for the caller to say, my God, that is a very short time to gather 65 people, it is our impression from extensive reporting that, in fact, not all of these 65 people were necessarily exact contemporaries of Kavanaugh. Some of them are actually just alums of schools in the area who would have known his networks, et cetera. And it is true that signatures on this letter started to be gathered by Kavanaugh and his allies soon after the anonymous letter was reported. That's last Wednesday. So yes, it came together quite fast, but you know, it can be tough for people outside the Beltway to understand, again, how insular some of these networks are. This is really, you know, the power elite of American politics, and they talk a lot, frankly. However, when Politico contacted signatories on this letter to ask if they still stood by Kavanaugh, very few of them got back to us to say that they did. A lot just didn't respond.
And I gather there's a corollary letter now from people who knew Dr. Ford at the time in high school. Are you familiar with that?
It's actually alums of Dr. Ford's school, Holton Arms. So some of them were her contemporaries, such as famous actress Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who graduated from the school a couple of years earlier, and some of them are not. It's really just alums of this school supporting her.
Nick in Astoria, you're on WNYC with Alana Shore from Politico. Hi, Nick.
Yeah, hi. Thanks so much. And Alana, I'm curious that because of the arguments around the accusation of it being when they're in high school, when they're minors, and it being just a one-time experience and not a pattern of offenses, I'm curious if Judge Kavanaugh had been a judge that was a champion for women's rights, for instance, if he publicly announced his support for Roe v. Wade, would these charges and accusations still be sticking the way they are right now?
It's an interesting thought experiment, and I would have to say no. That's frankly because if he had come out and declared himself as a Roe versus Wade supporter during his hearings, he might start getting Democratic votes. I mean, the entirety of Washington would be knocked on its head because that's not necessarily consistent with, you know, who he's been on the bench. Another interesting thought experiment is, what if Judge Kavanaugh had come out and said, my God, I don't remember, but now that I'm confronted with this story, I had a drinking problem as a teenager, and I'm sorry. I actually think he would probably get confirmed.
And here's a tweet from a listener who says, I went to the same high school as Blasey Ford. We all believe her. We all remember that culture. It all rings so depressingly, heartbreakingly true. Most troubling that he can't admit and describe the awful entitled boy, male, dominant, drinking, girl objectifying culture. This writer continues, if he could say that was the context, then he is enlightened now and sorrowful and regretful. No, he denies instead. His denial aligns with his general misogynist approach to judicial matters and policy. Sure, he looks, seems, quote, nice, and so do a lot of patronizing, paternalistic, and there, I guess, the writer ran out of characters. But that kind of gets to what you were just saying, even though it's just a thought experiment. What if Kavanaugh had said, yes, I did that, that was terrible, I learned from it, it was a one-time thing, but it was awful, we all have to educate our boys better in today's day and age, especially our privileged boys. But he never, in the stretches of testimony that I saw in his confirmation hearings, never mind his own, you know, these allegations against him, he never described his upbringing or his context in any kind of sort of socially critical language like that, right?
No, in fact, he actually portrayed himself as someone growing up in a crime-ridden area. Now, that refers to, obviously, the D.C. metro area and the high crime rates here in Washington in the 80s. But, in fact, he did grow up in a wealthy suburb. So, to the extent that he did describe his background, it was in a way that wasn't necessarily consistent with the wealth that he had as a child.
Let's take one more call. Brenda in Teaneck. You're on WNYC. Hi, Brenda.
Hi. Actually, you got with Barbara in Manhattan my question, which was, since Dr. Ford had taken a lie detector test and passed it, along with her therapist, why wasn't this being asked of Brett Kavanaugh? And my feeling is this. If he refused to take a lie detector test, in a way that would say that he was not going to hold himself to the same standards that she would. And so that really bothers me. We'll see what happens.
Brenda, thank you very much. And even though, Alana, you were saying that lie detector tests aren't worth all that much, tell me if I'm overstating what you said.
Correct.
Politically, people certainly could make a point of exactly what Brenda's saying. If Dr. Ford took a lie detector test, if we have this recent history of Mike Pence, remember, Vice President Pence volunteering to take a lie detector test just the other week to prove that he wasn't the writer of that anonymous New York Times op-ed, it would have been interesting to see him take a lie detector test on whether he thinks Trump is fit to serve, but that's another show. But now, here's that lie detector test question again, just after Pence had volunteered to take one, and they're going to say, no, 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 no. Or are they?
I mean, again, this is an interesting political question, and I understand why your listeners are asking it, but beyond the relatively thin science that these things are any metric of truth-telling, I'm sure Judge Kavanaugh would say the ultimate lie detector test is being under oath when I deny this, because there are pretty severe penalties for deliberately misleading the Senate.
Now, Alana, politically, some analysts say the lens through which to watch all this, and you're a congressional reporter, is the midterm elections, and that McConnell's main priority is saving the Republican Senate majority. Do you agree with that, and how might that affect whether Kavanaugh survives the process?
I mean, it's undeniable that Mitch McConnell's top priority right now is remaking the federal judiciary, and he is extremely good at it so far. He sat on Merrick Garland's nomination for months upon months upon months to clear the decks for Neil Gorsuch to ultimately be confirmed. So, you know, I think, yes, one of the bigger untold narratives here is the absolute politicization of the independent judiciary. And I think it is not fair to just blame Mitch McConnell, although he certainly has played a leading role in this. All sides are doing it. We can argue that Anita Hill was just a preview for what's going on now. But it is also undeniable that conservative voters are more motivated by judicial vacancies than Democrats. Democratic activists have struggled to summon people to go protest on Kavanaugh, and that's because Democrats have a hard time understanding how deeply the judiciary can shape their issues. So it is interesting to me that we may finally be seeing the left awakening to why they should fight about judicial opening.
Are you suggesting that defeating Kavanaugh's nomination, which of course would put anything off until after the midterm election in November, might cut both ways for the Democrats? On the one hand, they would have the opportunity to take back the Senate in November, and maybe Trump wouldn't get to put in another conservative nominee. On the other hand, if the opening still exists on Election Day, it might energize the Republican voting base more than the Democrats?
That is exactly what I'm suggesting. And one more point here. Let's say that Democrats take over the Senate in November. There is a slim chance that that may happen, slim but real. McConnell can still confirm another conservative justice before January. That's what we call the lame duck session. So unfortunately, Democratic voters are not, if they defeat Kavanaugh, getting to vote for the next justice. McConnell still has time.
That would be such a thumbing of McConnell's, what's the expression? Nose against whatever it is, you know what I mean? Against the will of the American people. If the American people were to elect a Democratic majority Senate and McConnell were to go forward with a Republican majority confirmation as a lame duck Senate anyway before January, think he would really do that?
100% guaranteed. And that is because McConnell has always portrayed this as a presidential matter. He has never said publicly the American people should speak in congressional elections on this court. So, yes.
Presidential matter. So he can justify for himself delaying it for a year when Obama nominated Merrick Garland in, what was it, February of Obama's last year? Because it's presidential, but yes. Not in the case where the Senate turns over.
Unfortunately, all I can do is just tell you what he has said, and that is exactly what he has said.
And we are only asking you to be a reporter, and you've done such a great job of that with us this morning, and we really, really appreciate, as involved as you are moment to moment in reporting this story, giving us as much time as you have. So, Alana Shore, congressional reporter for Politico, my great and our listeners' great gratitude.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, much more to come.